When you buy a brand new top-of-the-line smartphone, you kind of have this expectation,
Yeah, of course. You expect it to just work.
right? You turn the device on, and you expect to have access to, every single feature you paid for it. It's a clean transaction. Well,
Exactly.
imagine you boot up that phone, and a message pops up saying something like, "Actually, the processor on this device is a little too powerful, so we're locking those features away until the government decides it's safe for you to use them."
That would be infuriating. But I mean, that muddy reality is exactly what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it really is. And we're seeing it all over Matt's AI Weekly stack this week. This is the bundle dated June 27, 2026.
That's a huge week.
Oh, massive. We are looking at over 100 high signal developments today. And they really prove that AI is no longer just this standalone tool you use.
Right, it's transitioning into a proactive teammate.
Exactly. And because its power is growing so incredibly fast, it's triggering some, well, unprecedented government intervention. So for everyone listening, our mission for this deep dive is to synthesize all of this into the ultimate cheat sheet for you.
Definitely.
By the end of this, you'll know exactly how to cut your AI API costs in half, how to get significantly better research out of ChatGPT, and why the newest frontier models are suddenly getting locked behind all this red tape.
Let's actually start with that red tape because, well, model availability just isn't a purely technical variable for developers anymore.
Right.
It has basically become a geopolitical one. I mean, the defining story this week is the simultaneous government intervention hitting both Anthropic and OpenAI.
Yeah, let's look at Anthropic first, because they just emerged from this wild 2-week standoff with the Trump administration over export controls.
Yeah, the resolution there was intense. Anthropic literally had to fly their senior staff to DC for direct negotiations.
Oh, wow. So they're doing this in person.
Exactly. And the result is that their strongest cybersecurity model, Mythos 5, is only being restored to about 100 critical infrastructure organizations.
That's such a tiny number.
Right. Now, the general use model, Fable 5, that should return to the public next week, but the developer community is just terrified that these models are going to come back quietly restricted.
Like lobotomized, right? That's what the forums are calling it.
Yeah, lobotomized. People are really worried the model is going to overly refuse perfectly legitimate coding requests just to play it safe.
So from a regulatory side, why the sudden panic?
Well, these models have crossed a serious threshold in cybersecurity capabilities. I mean, we are talking about the ability to autonomously find zero-day vulnerabilities
Right.
and then trace complex attack paths across entire networks. So the government's stance is that these tools are now dual-use technologies.
Meaning they have like offensive and defensive potential.
Exactly. Massive potential for both. So controlling access, giving it to critical infrastructure defenders first, that's fundamentally a national security play. It's not just a standard tech policy update anymore.
It's like inventing a master key that can unlock any building in the world just to check if the fire alarms work.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, it's incredibly useful for safety inspectors, but you absolutely cannot just sell it at the local hardware store.
Yeah, you can't just hand it out.
And OpenAI is honestly in the exact same boat with their new GPT 5.6 family.
Yeah, they are.
The new flagship model, Sal, it just set a new state-of-the-art on Terminal Bench 2.1. And that benchmark specifically tests complex multi-step command line workflows.
Right, it's a hard benchmark.
It is. But they're launching it in a limited preview, specifically at the U.S. government's request. And Sam Altman even came out and called this staged rollout quite reasonable.
Well, the Frontier Labs are realizing they have to negotiate this entirely new relationship with federal regulators, and they're doing it in real time.
So what does that mean for the people building with these tools?
For anyone listening who builds apps on top of these frontier models, the main architectural takeaway here is that you absolutely must wire in fallbacks.
You just can't rely on one API anymore.
No, you cannot depend on a single model's uptime. A model might get taken offline, and not because of a server crash, but literally because of a localized export control directive or just some sudden policy shift.
But let me push back on this for a second. It's like sports car manufacturers suddenly being told by the DMV that their new engines are too fast for civilian roads.
Right.
So they can only sell to like professional race car drivers for now.
Yeah.
But our sources have leakers saying that a newer, even more capable version of Mythos has already emerged from training,
And
right?
just 2 months after Mythos 5.
Exactly. The compute clusters don't just turn off because politicians are arguing in DC. The labs are still training the next generation because they have to stay ahead. So, I mean, if a newer version is already trained, Does an embargo actually slow down development, or does it just hide it from the public?
It absolutely bottlenecks the deployment, and that fundamentally alters the competitive landscape. I mean, because Anthropic and OpenAI cannot legally deploy their massive new models to the general public right now, they are forced to compete on an entirely different battlefield.
Right. They can't win on raw intelligence this week.
Exactly. So they're competing on user friction and integration instead.
Which means they're moving away from the classic chat window and directly into the workspace.
Yes. And Andrej Karpathy actually called this the third major redesign of LLM UI UX.
Oh, that makes sense. So first, the model was a website.
Right. You visited the site. Then it became an app on your phone.
And now?
Now it's becoming an asynchronous entity. I mean, look at Anthropic. They just rolled out Claude Tag in beta for their enterprise and team Slack plans.
And this isn't just a basic chatbot, right?
No, not at all. It is not a bot you summon to answer some quick trivia question. It is a persistent teammate that literally lives in your Slack channels.
So how does it actually work in practice?
Well, the mechanism is what's so cool here. Claude Tag sits in the channel, and it continuously reads the history. It's building context over time.
Okay.
So you tag it in a thread, and it can break a complex task into stages. It can use your company's internal tools, and it can even write and merge pull requests while you are asleep.
That is wild.
It is, because, you know, the friction of AI hasn't been about intelligence limitations for a while now. The real friction is the burden of repeatedly explaining the context of your work.
Oh, man. Yeah. Every time you open a new chat window, you have to start from zero.
Exactly. Ambient AI completely solves this.
And the sources note that 65% of Anthropic's own product team's code is now written by their internal version of Claude Tag.
That's a staggering statistic.
It completely changes the dynamic. It's like the difference between having to file a formal IT support ticket where you explain your OS and your error code and basically your whole life story.
Right. Nobody wants to do that.
It's exactly. Versus having an IT guy who just sits at the desk next to you, quietly listening to the problem all day, and he just jumps in to fix it because he already has all the context.
And Google is pushing this exact same ambient philosophy with Gemini on the Mac workspace right now.
Oh, right. The speak to window feature.
Yeah. You simply hold the M key to dictate directly into whatever application you have open. So whether that's an email draft or a design file or a code base.
The AI is basically acting as a translation and execution layer underneath the whole operating system.
Exactly. They even have this connect another Mac option in the attachment menu for remote control.
Which is crazy. And to make that work efficiently, Google DeepMind just shipped native built-in computer use for Gemini 3.5 Flash.
Right, and it scored a 78.4 on the OS World benchmark.
Which is huge because Flash is such a cheap, small model.
Exactly. Having an AI click around your screen is no longer this premium, expensive feature. Computer use is becoming a cheap commodity.
So if navigating an OS is cheap, and AI is basically a persistent teammate for humans now, the logical next step is AI acting as a teammate for other AIs, right?
That is exactly where this is heading.
Because what strikes me about these ambient tools is they still rely on a single model pipeline. You're using Claude in Slack or you're using Gemini in your Mac. But looking at the OpenRouter data in the stack, developers are just abandoning loyalty to a single model entirely.
Oh, completely. We are moving into an era of AI self-organization where agents are routing other agents based on real-time data.
So how did this usually work before?
Well, historically, if you built an AI agent to do a specific task, you hard-coded the model. You programmed it to always use, say, a specific version of Claude for coding or GPT-4 for analysis.
Right. You locked it in.
Exactly. But OpenRouter's new MCP server, which stands for Model Context Protocol, it flips that whole architecture.
Okay.
It acts as a universal adapter. It gives your agent the ability to query live environments at runtime to make its own decisions.
So instead of relying on this static decision you made 6 months ago when you built the thing, your agent can just check live leaderboards.
Yes, like Design Arena. It can check current API pricing on the fly and literally ask, what is the best, most cost-effective model for code review right this second?
That's brilliant. One developer in the stack, Lennox Saint, integrated this into Codex and said it made the output twice as good.
Wow.
Yeah, just simply because the agent dynamically picked the best tool for the job based on live telemetry.
And Nuis Research is taking this even further by adding mixture of agents presets to their Hermes agent.
Mixture of agents or MoE, right?
Right. So instead of one model doing all the work, multiple reference models privately look at your prompt and offer advice to an aggregator model.
Wait, so the reference models don't talk to the user?
Nope. They never interact with you directly. The aggregator synthesizes all their advice, weighs their conflicting opinions, and then makes the final tool calls.
It's essentially an automated board of directors operating in milliseconds.
That's exactly what it is. And to truly grasp the scale of where multi-agent systems are heading, we have to talk about Thomas Wolfe's experiment at Hugging Face.
Oh, the 100 agents experiment.
Yes. They set loose over 100 independent AI agents for a week with one unified goal: to improve the inference speed of the Gemma 4 model.
And they achieved a 5x speedup.
Right. They did, but honestly, the speedup isn't even the real headline here. It's the emergent behavior that developed over that week.
Right, because the agents basically self-policed.
They did. At one point, a human researcher asked an agent to move their coordination to a private Telegram channel.
And the agent refused.
Yes. Unprompted, it said private side channels are indistinguishable from collusion.
That is so funny. And they also self-organized based on resource constraints, which I found fascinating.
Right, because some agents had plenty of GPU quota, while others were, you know, GPU poor.
And nobody programmed them to handle that, right?
Nope. Zero human direction. The compute-poor agents just spontaneously started writing specifications and doing all the mathematical groundwork for the compute-rich agents to execute.
And at another point, this wild four-agent relay just spontaneously formed.
Oh, yeah. Tell them about that one.
So one agent built the code but didn't have the quota to run it. A second agent tried to run it but hit a bug. Then a third agent diagnosed the bug. And finally, a fourth agent ran the final test and shipped it.
Just incredible.
Build, run, diagnose, ship. Split across four independent entities with zero human coordination.
Right.
But let me challenge this for a second. If agents are dynamically swapping models at runtime based on live pricing or forming these impromptu 100 agent committees to solve problems, aren't we completely losing the ability to reproduce or predict exactly how a task gets done?
Oh, we absolutely are. And that requires a fundamental reframing of how we even interact with software.
How so?
Well, this shifts the human's role from being a manager to being a governor. You no longer dictate the specific steps of execution. You just define the budget.
Like OpenRouter's $10 spend cap, for example.
Exactly. You define the budget and the goal, and the AI marketplace optimizes the rest. You are governing the broad outcomes rather than micromanaging the process.
But governing 100 autonomous agents requires some serious infrastructure.
Oh, definitely.
And I think for the developers and business leaders listening, the day-to-day reality isn't usually about, you know, emergent AI consciousness. It's mostly about managing massive data pipelines and keeping API costs from bankrupting the company.
That's the unsexy reality of building. The most lucrative work in AI right now isn't clever prompting. It is solving the infrastructure bottleneck.
Coinbase is a prime example of this. Their CEO, Brian Armstrong, shared their internal AI cost playbook this week.
Yeah, and they successfully cut their AI spend in half while their overall token usage actually went up.
Which sounds impossible, but the biggest win wasn't usage caps. Every developer knows what caching is, but Coinbase proved that in the LLM era, semantic caching isn't just a performance tweak. It's basically the single largest financial lever a company has.
For those who might not know, explain how semantic caching works here.
Sure. So semantic caching uses embeddings to realize that asking, what's the capital of France? And tell me France's capital.
Right.
Are the exact same intent.
Right.
So it serves a saved answer instead of paying the API to generate a new one from scratch. Taking their LiberChat tool from a 5% to a 60% cache hit rate literally halved their API bill overnight.
That's huge.
It's like hiring a genius consultant, but paying their full hourly rate every single time you ask them what their name is. Just write it down.
That's a perfect analogy. And they also defaulted 91% of their employees to open weight models like GLM 5.2 and Kimi 2.7.
Right, saving the expensive frontier models just for the really complex reasoning tasks.
Exactly. And that infrastructure focus is also driving a massive shift in how we handle messy real-world data, specifically in what people are calling the OCR wars.
Optical character recognition.
Yes. Getting data out of a massive PDF and cleanly into an AI context window has always been a nightmare.
That was the worst.
Because traditional chunking methods just destroy the relationships between tables, equations, and the surrounding text.
But Mistral just launched OCR4 to tackle this, right?
They did, and it's winning 72% of head-to-head matchups. It provides strict bounding boxes, classifies elements as tables or equations, and delivers confidence scores across 170 languages.
But then on the flip side, Baidu just open-sourced unlimited OCR, which takes a totally different architectural approach using only 500 million active parameters.
Yeah, and the mechanics of Baidu's approach solve a really major memory issue. Usually, to process a 40-page document, you have to chunk it up into arbitrary pieces.
Right.
But memory and context degrade at those chunk boundaries.
Yeah.
The AI literally forgets the nuanced context at the end of chunk A when it starts reading chunk B.
So how does Baidu fix that?
They use something called reference sliding window attention. So instead of hard cuts, the attention window slides smoothly across the text.
Oh, interesting.
It mimics how a human reads a dense book. You keep the overarching context, your recent memory, and your current focus aligned, and you just softly forget what's no longer immediately relevant. Hmm. This lets the model read 40 pages in a single forward pass without losing the thread.
Wow. And we are seeing these exact same context and I/O bottlenecks being solved at literally every layer of the stack.
Definitely.
Like Shadcoin just shipped these new chat UI primitives, specifically a message scroller component, to finally solve the front-end nightmare of scroll anchoring and streaming UI for developers.
That is a lifesaver.
And then all the way down to the hardware layer, OpenAI is partnering with Broadcom to build their first inference chip called Jalapeno. Plus, IBM is showcasing sub-1 nanometer node chips to push the physical constraints of compute even further.
And those compute gains are immediately being funneled into automated security. Look at OpenAI's new Daybreak push.
Right, pairing a Codex security plugin with their GPT 5.5 cyber model.
Yeah, and it just scored an 85.6% on CyberGym. It is autonomously finding and patching vulnerabilities in code bases before human engineers even flag them.
The scale of all this enterprise infrastructure is massive. But let's bring this all the way down to earth for the individual.
Good idea.
If you're listening to this and you aren't, you know, deploying custom silicon or negotiating export controls with the Commerce Department, what can you actually use this weekend to level up?
Well, there are some immediate, highly practical upgrades available right now. Let's start with the consumer side of that GPT 5.6 release.
Because while the flagship Sol model is locked down in preview, OpenAI did release Terra, right?
Yes. Terra gives you GPT 5.5 performance, but at half the price. And they also released Luna, which is designed for extremely cheap, high-volume tasks.
And the model most people are probably already using, GPT 5.5 Instant, got a stealth upgrade this week, too.
It did. It's now significantly better at understanding underlying intent and handling complex negative constraints in your prompts.
And the user experience on the ChatGPT web interface got a major workflow overhaul.
Yeah, this is a great weekend upgrade. By typing the at symbol in the composer, you can now instantly connect your Gmail, attach images, or search inline without ever leaving the chat environment.
That saves so much time. They also dropped a vastly improved dictation model that handles languages like Japanese, Korean, and Urdu with just incredible accuracy.
But honestly, my absolute favorite takeaway for the everyday user this week is the STORM research method out of Monica Lam's Stanford lab.
Oh, STORM is fascinating. Tell them how it works.
Well, most people get really shallow research from AI because they ask a single broad question.
Right, like tell me about solar power.
Exactly. But the STORM method fundamentally changes the architecture of the prompt. It forces the model into a multi-agent debate before it writes a single synthesized word.
So instead of just asking for a report, STORM forces the AI to adopt 6 to 8 different expert perspectives.
Right. It literally interviews those simulated perspectives, synthesizes their conflicting findings, and builds a rigorous outline based on that debate.
And the Stanford researchers say this yields 25% better organized articles. So next time you want to research a major purchase, like a new camera, don't just ask what's the best option.
Exactly.
Ask an AI economist, an industry veteran, and a tech skeptic to debate it first and then give you the summary.
Because the true skill of the future isn't knowing the answers. It's knowing how to architect the right multi-perspective questions. You have to guide the model's reasoning process before you ask for an output.
Just a few other quick signals to keep on your radar this weekend. X Money just launched in early access, and they're offering a massive 6% APY for Premium Plus users just to pull people into their ecosystem.
That's quite the hook.
Yeah. Also, in Redmond, Washington, an ambient AI drone acting as a first responder actually tracked and caught a shoplifter by autonomously following him to a bus in real time.
Ambient AI everywhere.
Literally. And lastly, Claude Sonnet 5 leaped this week. It boasts a 1 million token context window. But developers, you need to be careful. The new tokenizer reportedly uses 30% more tokens for the exact same text, so keep a close eye on your API budgets.
It really is a staggering amount of movement. It reflects a complete shift in how we interact with these systems from top to bottom.
It really does. I mean, we started in Washington seeing how regulators are actively bottlenecking the deployment of models like Fable 5 and Sol.
Right.
Then we looked at how models are bypassing those limits by moving out of the chat window and living persistently in our Slack channels and our operating systems.
We saw independent agents forming impromptu committees.
Yes, and we learned that managing these new systems requires mastering things like semantic caching and sliding window attention just to keep the data flowing efficiently.
Well, as we navigate this whole transition, I want to leave you with one final kind of provocative concept from the sources.
Now let's hear it.
There's a new tool making waves called In the Weights. And it is essentially an AI-centric vanity search tool.
Wait, what exactly is it searching?
Well, for decades, if you wanted to know your public reputation or your company's reputation, you cared about your Google search rankings.
Right, you optimize for search engines.
Exactly. But In the Weights doesn't search the web. It searches the neural weights of the AI models themselves to see what they conceptually know about you.
Wow. That completely changes the paradigm of digital reputation.
It really does. I mean, ponder this. What happens when your personal or corporate reputation isn't a list of blue links anymore, but is literally baked into the mathematical weights of the AI models that run the world?
That's a scary thought.
Right. If an AI model knows you incorrectly, how do you even begin to do SEO to fix a neural network?
Man, it all goes back to that smartphone we talked about at the beginning. The device is incredibly powerful. It's operating in the background of our lives. But the rules of who controls it, how it sees us, and what it's allowed to do, those rules are still being written right in front of us.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the AI frontier. Keep asking the right questions, keep testing these tools, and keep learning. We'll see you next time.